everyone. We'd like to begin the conference call, please. Thank you for joining us today for the Institute for Literacy and Learning's Straight Talk Live Chat Conference Call Series. Today, we have the pleasure of being joined by Dr. Joe Torgerson. Dr. Torgerson is nationally known for research on both the prevention and remediation of reading difficulties in children, as well as work on assessment of phonological awareness and reading. Today, Dr. Torgerson will be discussing interventions for struggling adolescent readers. This call is being recorded and will be available in the library section of our website for your future listening pleasure. Before I begin, I have some important messages. If you have a question for Dr. Torgerson, please email it to straighttalklivechat@theinstituteforliteracyandlearning.org. Again, the email address is straighttalklivechat@theinstituteforliteracyandlearning.org, no spaces. If time does not allow for all questions to be answered, all emailed questions and their answers will be mailed to everyone registered for this call. Each of you who have registered for this conference call will receive an email survey. Please help us serve you better by filling out the 2-minute survey when it is sent to you following this live chat session. The Institute truly appreciates your interest, input, and ideas. In the next few days, please check your inboxes for the next Institute for Literacy and Learning live chat conference call with Dr. Louisa Motz on April 28th at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. I would also like to mention that the Institute will be offering 3-week-long Straight Talk by the Expert conferences this summer, the week of June 16th through the 20th in Harrisburg, PA. Watch your email for that announcement also. We are pleased that Dr. Louisa Motz, Dr. Carolyn Denton, and Mary Dodoniker are again joining us this year at the Straight Talk by the Experts week-long Graduate Accredited Learning Conference. The Institute for Literacy and Learning is pleased to offer 1 Act 48 credit for participants on this conference call from Pennsylvania. At the end of this call, I will announce how to register for the Act 48 Professional Development Credit. Thank you again for joining us, and now I would like to present Dr. Torgerson speaking about interventions for struggling adolescent readers. Dr. Torgerson?
Okay, good. First of all, let me say that I'm speaking to a very diverse audience. I saw the participant list this morning, and we have people ranging from superintendents of schools to teachers to coaches to some folks from publishing companies, and so perhaps bits and pieces of this will be useful to all of you. My guess is that not every bit of it will be of interest to all of you. But my goal during this time is to sort of share what I think are the most important, really big ideas about as we move, that we need to be kind of aware of as we move forward in trying to improve the power of our interventions for struggling readers in middle and high school, or late elementary, middle and high school. And I hope that you all have downloaded the PowerPoint presentation that was on the website, because if you haven't, it will be harder to follow this talk. Some of my slides will actually show some data, and I can describe it a little bit, but it depends a lot on you being able to see it. So I'm going to signal when I move from slide to slide, and right now I'm looking at slide number 2, which is the one after the title slide. And in this one, I just want to set the groundwork by saying that, we ought to think about the criteria of success for our interventions, and so that we will keep working at trying to improve them until we achieve these criteria. The first criteria, I think, the most basic, is that whatever we do on interventions for older students, its ultimate impact ought to be to improve their reading comprehension. That's the sort of summative reading skill that's measured by all of the high-stakes accountability measures in reading. It's the ultimate reading skill that's really necessary for using literacy in life and in school and so forth. And if we only affect decoding, if we only affect fluency, and we don't see generalization of that to comprehension, then we need to think about altering or tweaking or adding to our interventions. The next criteria, which is both of these are pretty obvious, is that whatever we do for interventions needs to accelerate growth in reading so that kids who are in the intervention actually grow faster than the average for their grade level. That is, we want them to achieve yearly growth, but we also want to achieve what some people call catch-up growth, because they're behind. If we ever expect them to read at grade level, they have to achieve 1.5 years growth or 2 years growth or 2.5 years growth for a year, for years with instruction. And oftentimes in the past we've been content with bringing them up to the standard of a year's worth of growth, but that simply is not acceptable in today's climate where we're trying to help all students meet grade level standards in reading. So now I'm switching to the next slide, and this is the slide that just sort of is my attempt to show the complex of factors that are involved in reading comprehension. That's our ultimate goal, what the kids have to know and be able to do in order to be good comprehenders. And it's not an unusual list. I think most people would agree that kids really do have to be able to read the words on the page accurately and fluently. They have to have good oral language skills. They have to have a reasonable amount of conceptual and factual knowledge, at least about the content in which they're reading. They have to be able to use certain sort of strategic thinking processes while they read in order to help them focus on the meaning. And then oftentimes they have to actually be able to do some pretty complex reasoning to follow the gist or the main ideas of what's being there on the text. And last of all, and this is really critical, and it's something we're only beginning to understand more deeply, is that they really have to be interested in what they're reading and motivated to comprehend it in order to do well. I've sort of had put these into three colors. The red is just the sort of the word reading part. The big brown section is all the kind of language skills kids need to have and the thinking skills, and then the green is showing that motivation kind of stands there as another factor. This next slide, I've just changed slides. At the top is a research-based view of reading comprehension. The only reason I have this slide is to illustrate the fact that comprehending requires active mental effort, and this is the sense in which we have to do a much better job in both our interventions and in our work with grade-level readers on the topic of engagement, finding interesting things for them to read, setting up interesting assignments, having opportunities to work with peers, lots of things we know that can increase engagement. We really have to build into our interventions, because when we ask students to improve their comprehension skills, we're asking them to become more engaged in constructing meaning from what they're reading. And that's a big, big step for a lot of kids. Changing to the next slides, this is the one that says what skills and knowledge are required for reading comprehension. What skills and knowledge required for reading comprehension are typically deficient in adolescent struggling readers. The reason I have this question is because, you know, we have this list of things that are required for good comprehension, and as we think about targeting our interventions, we always have limited intervention time, we should really have a sense of what are the areas that adolescents struggle most with in terms of being good comprehenders. And there's a very famous statement in the Reading Next document that most people, I would assume, are familiar with, that suggested that only about 10% of older readers continue to struggle at the with word-level skills. And, of course, anytime you make a statement like that, the truth of it depends on what do you mean by word-level problems. If you mean problems in decoding single-syllable words, then that statement is probably closer to the truth than if you were to say any child who struggles in decoding multi-syllable words that they've never seen before doesn't have a word-level problem. But anyway, there's a tension in the writing and the thinking about interventions for adolescent poor readers as to whether or not we actually have to have the capacity to teach them these sort of mechanical word-level reading skills that they should have learned in grades K to 3. And so this notion of how many kids actually struggle with these problems is a relevant question. There was a very recent study report, it's still in press, done by the group at the Kansas Center for Learning, that's Don Deschler's group, where they did a systematic examination of a range of reading skills in 8th and 9th grade struggling readers. And changing to the next slide that starts with Hawk et al., this study studied 345 8th and 9th kids who were defined as struggling readers because they performed below the 40th percentile on a couple of good measures of reading comprehension. And there were 202 struggling readers in this group and 143 proficient readers. And these kids were given about a 2.5-hour battery of tests that measured all different kinds of reading skills, from decoding to fluency to accuracy to vocabulary to comprehension. And the chart on the next page, this slide is white, shows you the percentile rank of performance of the struggling readers as compared to the what they call proficient readers, that is, kids that were above the 40th percentile in comprehension. And you can see that across the board, the struggling readers were pretty low in comparison to the proficient readers on different all the different measures. For example, they performed at the 14th percentile on decoding efficiency. This is how fluently they can decode words that they've never seen before. The big conclusion from this study was that 63% of the struggling readers in this sample had significant deficits in all the areas that were measured. Now, so that's a little different than the statement from Reading Next that only 10% of struggling readers have problems at the word level. But I'm changing to the next slide now, which talks about an important issue and a question. And the question really is should interventions address all the areas of weakness? One of the facts of life in late elementary, middle, and high school is that we're always going to have limited time for interventions, and so we really have to think hard about our points of maximum leverage. And the question is, if you have a child who has, let's say, moderate decoding problems or even severe decoding problems, should you spend time on that, raising those up, or should you focus mostly on the thinking and the knowledge and the vocabulary, hoping that they can somehow compensate for those low-level decoding skills? The question really is, how strong do decoding and fluency skills need to be before they're no longer an issue? Unfortunately, the answer to that question is really, it depends. It depends on how good a thinker the child is, how strong their vocabulary is. A lot of dyslexic students who have IQs of 120 and good vocabulary, they can do a lot of compensation for poor decoding skills because they can kind of fill in the gaps with their thinking ability. They can't comprehend at grade level, but they can do a lot better on comprehension tests than they do on word level tests. Anyway, kids that have lower vocabulary and perhaps not as well developed thinking skills, they're going to struggle more with comprehension if they aren't pretty solidly grounded in their ability to read the words on the page accurately and fluently. Now we're going to skip these next three slides that have these histograms in them or these bar graphs. I put those in there thinking that it would communicate a useful message, but as I looked at them this morning, I thought they were a bit complicated. We don't really need them. The main idea from them is that there are a lot of kids in 10th grade and 7th grade who struggle on our state-level accountability tests who have quite well-developed reading fluency and accuracy. So it's clearly true that there are probably more kids with decoding problems out there than the Reading Next estimated, but it's also true that we have lots of kids who are really quite competent at the basic reading part of the task, that is reading the words accurately and fluently, but for some reason aren't able to do the thinking, the reasoning, or have the vocabulary required to be successful on these the kinds of year-end accountability measures that we give as part of No Child Left Behind that measure comprehension. This next slide actually shows a picture of a document that we recently wrote with the folks at the University of Texas that just looked at a bunch of different intervention studies with kids in middle and high school, and it calculated an effect size, that is how strong an effect did interventions have that focused primarily on comprehension as opposed to interventions that focused primarily on the word level. And you can see that the effect size for comprehension-oriented interventions was 0.52. The effect size for interventions that focused at the word level was 0.40. And this was an impact on standardized measures of reading comprehension. So the comprehension studies produced a slightly larger gain or impact on comprehension than the word level studies, but they both produced a significant impact on comprehension. What I want to say is what we should focus on is going to be determined a lot by what characteristics the kids we're working with bring to the intervention experience. This next slide, just real quickly, I wanted to illustrate for you the impact that can be achieved with very intensive instruction that focuses on very intensive instruction that's given to learning disabled children who simply haven't learned to read by the third, fourth, and fifth grade. In this study, we worked with kids that were between 8 and 10 years of age. This is a slide that is beginning to describe the study. It's actually slide 13 in the PowerPoint. These kids had all been receiving special education services for about 16 months. They were nominated as the worst readers in their special education classes, and their standard score on word attack, that is to sound out words, was 69, which is below the first percentile. Their ability to read words accurately, word identification was also below the first percentile. They had a verbal IQ of around 93. We gave these kids about 67 hours of one-on-one instruction, 2 hours a day for 8 weeks. Now, that's a very intensive kind of instruction, and our goal was really to see what could be accomplished if you focused very intensively on kids who had simply not learned to read to that point. And we used two different intervention methods. They both taught phonics explicitly, but you can see the LIPS program spent a lot of time directly teaching phonemic awareness and phonemic decoding about 85% of the time. The embedded phonics program only spent about 20% of the time doing that. The embedded phonics program spent 50% of its time reading words in text, connected text, and the LIPS program only spent 5% doing that. So really different emphasis in how much time they spent on sort of direct, powerful instruction in phonemic decoding, phonemic awareness, as opposed to reading text. Now, when they were reading text, they weren't just reading this by themselves. They were being coached by a highly skilled teacher who was helping them decode words that they didn't know that they came to them, and sort of practicing what they had learned in their direct instruction. Now, this graph just shows you the impact of this instruction on the standard scores for these students in reading accuracy and reading comprehension. This is the graph that is flat during the first part and then spikes up and then is relatively flat during the last section. I just wanted to mention to you, and both interventions did just the same, but the thing to notice here is that during the time the kids were in special education, that's the pre-test to the pre-post, that's the 16 months they were in special ed, you see no change in their standard score. It stayed around a standard score of 80. And this means that they were making a year's worth of growth in reading for a year's worth of instruction. During the intervention period of time, this went up very sharply, and they gained a lot. They really accelerated a lot during this time. And in the 2 years follow-up period, during which we had no contact with the students, some of them were back in special ed and many of them were in regular ed, they continued to grow slightly. They continued to improve their standard score up to a standard score of about 92, which puts them in the low end of the average range. And this was in reading accuracy and comprehension. So this shows you can have a major impact on the reading comprehension of kids who simply can't read. They have very, very poor word-level reading skills, and focusing on that really produces a big gain in their comprehension. I just want to show you another study that doesn't produce nearly as dramatic results, I'm a little worried that people might again be confused by this if you don't have the PowerPoint in front of you, but this is the study of struggling readers in third and fifth grade, and in this study we evaluated four commercially available intervention methods: corrective reading, Wilson reading system, spell read, PAT, and failure-free reading. The wrinkle on the study was that we only allowed the corrective reading and the Wilson reading system to use the word-level instruction components of the program. They weren't allowed to teach vocabulary and comprehension. We wanted to contrast interventions that focus only on the word level with interventions that focused on both the word level and comprehension. And we worked with third and fifth graders. These were the students participating in the study. This is slide 17. There were a lot of students that we screened. We ended up with a sample of about 772 kids. And you can see at the bottom that this was a sample of kids that were relatively okay in phonemic decoding. They had performed at the 32nd percentile. We had anticipated that they would struggle more with that than they did, but it had to do with problems in selecting the sample and some other things in this study. But so this is a group of kids who are primarily struggling with fluency and reading comprehension and not so much struggling with accuracy. And this next graph, which is slide 18, shows you that it turns out that three of our intervention methods, spell read, Wilson, and corrective, spent most of their time on word-level reading skills, teaching phonemic decoding, teaching sight words, helping kids grow in fluency, and only a little bit of time on comprehension and vocabulary, whereas failure-free sort of divided its time between those two. This next slide shows you that this is the outcomes for third graders, and the outcomes for the interventions that focused on word-level instruction are in blue. The control group, which was whatever the schools were already giving them, is in red, and the failure-free program is in green. You can see that the word-level instruction had a very strong effect on kids' phonemic decoding ability, an impact on their word-reading accuracy, and also a significant impact compared to the control group on their reading comprehension, but that was mostly because the control kids went down from the pretest to the post-test in their standard score. These, again, are standard scores, so there was a very slight closing of the gap in comprehension, but it only went up one standard score point in this study, which was disappointing to me. The outcomes for fifth graders were very similar, except that in this case, over on the right, you see the control group kids did just about as well as the kids who were receiving the intervention. And there wasn't a huge amount of closing the gap. The kids in comprehension only went from a standard score of 91 to a standard score of 92, and so that's not a lot of gain. So the results of this study were sobering to us in that these kids got interventions every day in groups of three from about November through May, and we saw only a little bit of closing the gap. They certainly didn't fall further behind, and they grew strongly in their word level skills, but we didn't see a lot of closing of the gap in comprehension. Now I'm showing you a lot of studies because it's really important for us to get some understanding of the kind of effects that we can expect when we intervene with older kids. And these results are pretty sobering, actually, in terms of the challenge that we face in terms of accelerating their growth on measures of reading comprehension. In this next study, this is a study we did here in Florida with ninth grade students, and these kids were all picked for the study because they performed below the eighth grade level on the Florida Comprehensive Assessment Test. They performed below grade level in eighth grade on the FCAT. I think I'm going pretty fast right now. I just noticed the time. I had wanted to finish in about 35 minutes so we'd have lots of time for questions, but I might be going a little fast, so I'll slow down a little bit. And so this was a group of kids that we picked to intervene with in ninth grade because they had not met grade level standards on the test in eighth grade, and there were 592 students, the students were both pretty severely impaired. That's level one students, and pretty close to grade level, but still below grade level. That was level two students, and these kids were randomly assigned to receive one of either one of three different kinds of interventions or a control intervention, which the school had designed and was using. Notice that this group of students, this was from a sort of suburban school district. This was not an urban sample. It's a pretty high-performing school district. In general, they were fine in the phonemic decoding test we gave. Their oral reading fluency wasn't too bad, but their reading comprehension was down at the 21st percentile on average. So these students got a 90-minute instructional period per day in groups of about 20 students, 5 days a week for the school year. The instruction actually started probably in mid-September and went through May, but the results I'm going to show you are outcomes on the Florida Comprehensive Assessment Test, which is given in late March, so it's not a full year's worth of instruction. Okay, so just to summarize, these are kids who perform below grade level on the FCAT as eighth graders. We took them into this study as ninth graders. They varied a lot in their reading skills, but in general, they weren't too impaired in basic reading skills, mostly in comprehension. And they got 90 minutes a day of instruction using one of three different interventions, and then there was also a control group. The control condition, the kids in that group did a lot of reading in small groups. They did a lot of discussion of the material. They had written assignments to do, and there was sort of as-needed instruction in multi-syllable decoding. If a teacher noticed that kids were struggling with that, she would do a mini-lesson on that and so forth. Another method we used was Read 180, which is a widely used technology-based intervention that provides instruction in small groups, both at the word level and on comprehension and vocabulary. Then Reach is an intervention that's a combination of materials that have been used and sold by SRA for the older struggling readers, involving corrective reading and then other reading and writing, critical thinking kinds of interventions. It's quite scripted, and it involves small group instruction, and so the kids would divide into small groups and work in small groups and also do independent work. And then RISE, which was the other intervention, was developed by our state-level reading specialist, Evan Leskey, and it was sort of of a beefed up version, I think, of the control group, but there was they used text sets that were leveled readers, and so the kids would have lots of opportunities reading at their own level, and lots of discussion of the meaning of in the text, specific work on vocabulary, and then again, groups that needed decoding help would get that in small group instruction. Okay. The next graph, which is slide 23, shows you the scores of the students, the amount they gained in something called the developmental scale score on the FCAT. This scale score allows us to compare performance and the amount of growth a student achieves from year to year. And the dotted lines on this graph represent the expected amount of gain for a 1 year's growth, which is about 77 scale score points. And so look over at the left side, and you'll see the level one students. These are our lowest readers, and notice that all of the groups made more than expected yearly growth on the FCAT, which was good news. It wasn't double at yearly growth, but it was on the order of a year and a half's worth of growth on the FCAT. And look at level two students. Now, they're stronger students. First of all, let me go back to level one. The outcomes were pretty much the same for all the intervention measures. For the level one students, our most impaired students. For the level two students, two of the methods, Read 180 and RISE, did better than either the control group or the REACH program. But they didn't accelerate their development quite as much as the level one students did in terms of the change in their developmental scale score. Now I want to show you the real sobering spot. So that's the graph that shows the bar graph about the improvement. Go to the next slide, and I want to show you something that's pretty sobering. On the top part of this page, we're talking about students who were level one in eighth grade, okay? And so when they were in eighth grade, the number of developmental scale score points between where they scored and the next level up, level two, was 134. So for them to have moved from level one to level two in eighth grade, that was a difference of 134 developmental scale score points. Remember, they gained more than a year's worth of growth, but the gap to level two in ninth grade was still 93 developmental scale score points. So on average, these students did not change their level on the FCAT. They were still predominantly level one students, even though they had accelerated their development about a year and a half's worth of growth in a year. Looking down at the level two students, this is data from the very best intervention, the strongest intervention. In eighth grade, these kids were 83 developmental scale score points away from grade level performance. Okay, and then they gained more than a year's growth, but the gap to grade level performance in ninth grade was still 68 developmental scale score points. That is, not very many of the kids moved up to grade level as a result of this intervention, even though, you know, this is a group that's just below grade level. They still, on average, were 68 developmental scale score points away from grade level performance. Okay. All this means is that in order to help these children move all the way up to grade level, we're either going to need to find a way to increase the power of this intervention or certainly extend it across more than 1 year. Now let me just real quickly go through a study that's received some attention recently. It was a very large-scale study sponsored by the Institute for Education Sciences of two different interventions for ninth grade students. It's called the Enhanced Reading Opportunity Study, and if you want to read the report of this study, I have the reference. You can obtain it from the website, but let's just go through these statements so you understand what it was. This was a randomized controlled trial, and it tested two literacy interventions that really are designed to accelerate the growth of ninth grade readers. Okay, and one of these was the Reading Apprenticeship Academic Literacy that's been used for a number of years by WestEd, and Extreme Reading, which was designed by the University of Kansas Center for Research on Learning, Don Deschler's group. They're the ones who, you know, have been working a long time in adolescents, not just in literacy, but in learning disabilities and other kinds of learning problems. And this was their attempt to put together an intervention instruction for struggling readers in ninth grade. Both interventions were comprehensive. They were designed to help ninth graders learn what they needed to know to be successful readers, to become to improve their comprehension skills and be motivated to read more and enjoy reading. They both had components that would teach word-level skills, and they also spent a lot of time on engagement and teaching strategies and vocabulary and so forth. In this large study, there were 2,916 ninth graders from 34 high schools in 10 school districts around the country. Going to the next slide, which is slide number, slide number 26. We start off with the idea that the schools were randomly assigned to the interventions, and then within each school, students were randomly assigned to either be in the intervention or control group. So it was a true random assignment study, very nicely, well-executed, highly controlled study. And each teacher now was responsible for teaching four sections of the Enhanced Reading Opportunities class that she was assigned to, either the one from Westhead or the one from Deschler's group. Each section had 10 to 15 students in it, so it's a smaller groups than the ones than the study I just showed you in Florida. The classes met for a minimum of 225 minutes a week, so that's less time. They were scheduled as a 45-minute class every day or as a 75 to 90-minute class that met every other day. And they began about an average of 6 weeks after the start of the 2005-2006 school year. They weren't post-tested, though, until the very end of the year, which gives them an advantage of a full year's worth of instruction. Teachers received 1 week of training during the summer, pretty much like a lot of school districts would do this, some booster sessions during the year, perhaps more support than could often be provided by school districts, and then a minimum of 2 one-day coaching visits during the year. And this, the last thing just talks about how the students attended 83% of the scheduled classes, and they received just over about 11 hours of instruction per month, about 80 hours altogether. And the next page shows the results for the study. The black bar shows the starting point on, this is the grade measure of reading comprehension. It's a group-administered measure of reading comprehension, and the average standard score of all the kids was 85.9, which is about the 16th percentile at the beginning of the study. You can see that the kids in the two interventions improved to 90.2, which is a gain of about 5 standard score points during that time, which is a good closing of the gap in terms of the standard score, but it was only slightly better than what the kids in the control group were doing. So other things that were happening in these schools were also assisting these struggling readers to improve that weren't part of these interventions. So this is good news in that the comprehension was accelerated by these interventions. But over on the right in the green text, I've written some more sobering things. The kids in the intervention grew from the 16th to the 25th percentile. That's good news. But here's the other challenging part. 76% of the students who received the interventions were still 2 or more years below grade level at the end of the year. Again, just suggesting that we have a lot to learn about how to organize and deliver instruction that will really accelerate the growth of struggling readers. We have that to learn. We also have to accept the fact that we might need to provide these interventions over multiple years. That's very likely part of the story. Now let me move to something that is not so much research-based, but that is sort of experience-based. When people think about how to provide interventions for older struggling readers, to my knowledge, there are two sort of major kinds of models that are being used. One of the models is often being used in schools in which there's a really high proportion of struggling readers. And it makes good sense for this kind of a school where you have, let's say, 70% of your kids reading substantially below grade level. In this model, it's organized so that every student in the school takes a reading or a reading and writing or a reading and thinking class for 1 or 2 periods a day. Okay, that's the first thing. So let's say during the second period, everybody in the school is focusing on reading. This makes it, of course, required that almost all teachers participate as reading instructors during the reading period. And the third thing is that all students receive instruction that's targeted at their level. So kids that are above grade level or at grade level, they're receiving instruction that's really designed to enhance their comprehension, move them to even higher levels of being able to think about text and writing and so forth. Kids that are substantially below grade level are receiving instruction that's targeted at their capabilities. And the nice thing about having all the groups done, taught at the same level is if we find that a child is inappropriately placed in one of the groups, it's easy to shift them to a higher group or to a lower group because they're all being taught at the same time. Now, this particular model requires really quite well-developed curriculum supports, even some aspects of scripted instruction, so that teachers can use these as instructional scaffolds, that is, to help them plan their lessons and then know what to teach. The other model that is certainly used much more widely than the previous model is that one that asks content area that depends on content area literacy supports, that is, literacy support from the content area teachers, and also provides two different levels of intervention classes. Now, some schools only provide one level of intervention class, but I think eventually we're going to discover that we need at least two levels of intervention classes. So the first point is that science, history, social studies, and English teachers assume more responsibility for teaching students how to comprehend and learn from their texts. I would never certainly expect a science teacher or a history teacher or a social studies teacher to try to deal with the students' decoding problems or to teach them how to decode multisyllable words. However, we need to expect them be knowledgeable about how to help students think more productively about the content in their text, how to comprehend, how to use text structure, how to skim the text for a meaning. Those are all strategies that are involved in comprehension that these teachers need to be working with students on. And then there's a large group of kids that are close to grade level standards. In Florida, these might be level 2 kids. They're not at grade level, but they're relatively close. These students might be taught to improve their reading skills in what we would call content-oriented intervention classes, where a content teacher in history and science would be specially trained to provide more powerful support in comprehension strategies and thinking than would be typically the case in a regular history or science class. These classes could be counted as content area classes, but their primary focus, in addition to teaching content, would be to really help students engage their text more productively. And then the second level of intervention would be more intensive, broad-based intervention classes that might meet for 90 minutes a day and no more than 10 or 15 students that would actually have the capacity to help students who had word-level reading problems as well as comprehension and vocabulary problems. I just want to show you in the last part of this talk some documents that are worth reading as we think about solutions for adolescent literacy. One is the document from the National Association of Secondary School Principals, Creating a Culture of Literacy, a Guide for Middle and High School Principals. Very useful set of ideas in that document. Another one is a document we've produced that's about academic literacy instruction for adolescents. I think you can download these from the site here on which this program is based. And it talks about recommendations for content area teachers. It discusses this issue of intervention in pretty much the way I've talked about it here in this little brief talk. And it also provides suggestions for ELL students. And then there's a document we've very recently done that's called Improving Literacy Instruction in Middle and High School, a Guide for Principals, that really talks about school-level organization and things that principals need to really know about organizing an effective intervention program and also improving literacy generally in their schools. So that's the end of my presentation about interventions for adolescents. And now I'm not exactly sure how this question part works.
I'm actually going to ask you a few questions if you don't.
Okay.
From slide 29, content area support for comprehension in subjects such as science, history, social studies, and English are suggested as an instructional model at the secondary level.
Yeah.
How would you suggest professionally developing teachers for this type of support?
Okay, good. So there's a couple issues here. One is the second bullet on that slide where we're talking about, and this relates to a general almost universally accepted recommendation for improving overall levels of adolescent literacy. We have to get our content area teachers involved in thinking about their job more broadly than perhaps many of them think about it now. They often think about their job as being one of delivering the content, the ideas, the knowledge in biology or history or social studies that they know about. We want them to enlarge their sense of their responsibilities to include helping kids learn how to read material in their content area more effectively with greater comprehension. Now, so that's a set of skills that they weren't trained in prior to coming out and teaching, and so hence the question about how we would go about professional development on that. Well, the basic approach, I think, is not different than any other professional development challenge that we face in terms of improving teacher capabilities in performing essential educational tasks. Let me just first of all say that the number of things we want them to learn to do is not huge. For example, one of the recommendations is that we want them to spend a bit more time in their content area classes having rich discussions about the meaning of their texts that are based in the text, that analyze the text, and that where kids have a chance to share their thoughts and have other students critique their thoughts and have some back and forth, because this has been shown in research that will actually help kids to become better thinkers while they read text. Another thing we want teachers to learn how to do is to think about the strategies they use when they read their content area text and begin to explicitly teach those strategies to students who a large number of students probably aren't using them. The third thing, of course, is to try to use devices like having peer discussion groups, like having multi-levels of text, some that are highly interesting in addition to the textbook on a topic, to get kind of more engagement going in terms of the content. So the ways of doing professional development are, you know, the general range of things. I mean, having forming discussion groups in schools. We've seen major progress in middle and high schools being made where they have a strong teacher or two who leads a discussion group, who reads relevant literature. They meet together and they discuss what this means for classroom instructional strategies. They share things they're doing in their classes that seem to be effective in these things. So that's certainly one sort of time-honored way of improving our knowledge and skills in this area. Another way, of course, is to seek out teachers or a teacher who are already doing this well and give them an assignment as a coach for several years within a middle school or high school to really visit classrooms, to model instruction, to assign readings, or to work with teachers in readings to build skills that way. So I don't have any novel ideas about how to do the professional development. It's just that we need to focus professional development on helping content area teachers become more skilled at least leading discussions better and becoming more explicit in the way they teach students to think about their text or the strategies they use while reading it. That's about the best I can do.
Okay, thank you. The next question comes from slide 5. Reading Next states that 10% of older readers who have challenges struggle with word levels. So of a multi-part question, the first part is, if word level skills is not the challenge for most struggling readers, what other deficits could be obstructing text comprehension?
Oh, okay. Well, the general view, I think by the writers of Reading Next, was that it's primarily lack of vocabulary, lack of broad content knowledge. So, for example, one of the things that helps you to comprehend better when you're reading a history text is if you already know a lot about history. And, of course, kids who begin to struggle as early as first, second, third grade, they don't read nearly as much as kids who are good readers, and they often are quite deficient in their content knowledge by the time they read seventh or eighth grade. This is a huge hurdle, because then they move up to ninth grade and they read a history text that assumes that they already have some history knowledge. And it may not assume that they know specific facts, but it assumes they have sort of a broad sense of history and other things that have gone on, and even that they have a vocabulary that they've acquired from earlier. And if they don't have that, then that interferes with their comprehension. And then the third thing is that often there's the assumption that these kids don't read as strategically or as actively or as thoughtfully as good readers read, and so we need to focus instruction on that. And I basically agree for the in large part that those are the three most impactful domains. I mean, if we also include engagement, so you know, if we want to have a significant impact on large numbers of struggling readers in our school, particularly those kids that are sort of just below grade level, maybe 1 or 1.5 years behind grade level or just below the cut point, focusing instruction on helping them become more thoughtful readers, helping them to become more engaged in the reading, and then some vocabulary instruction, targeted vocabulary instruction, are probably the ways to move them the quickest towards grade level standards. However, if you have students that are really poor in their word level skills, you can teach a lot of vocabulary and a lot of strategies, but they still can't access the text, and therefore that instruction is kind of futile for some of those kids. So, and it really comes down to how many of which kinds of kids do you have in your school. I mean, some inner city schools, some urban schools have lots and lots of kids that are still struggling with word level reading skills, and so they need to have the capacity to help those kids improve to some minimal level, to some level where they're reasonably confident in being able to read most of the words in text, while at the same time they work on these other dimensions of reading.
Okay.
That's my answer to that.
Great. And then the next two parts of the question are, what type of assessment plan would you recommend to identify student challenges so we can meet the needs of each student? And how much training would you suggest to build competency with administration and analysis of these assessments?
Wow, that's a good, really good question. So I'll tell you what we're trying to do in Florida, and this is my general answer too, because we're involved in this work. But it seems to me that the first thing you need to know, if let's say I'm a middle school principal and I'm facing the coming year, I'm thinking about my needs for intervention support. Well, the first thing I need to know is how many kids in my school are not likely to achieve grade level performance on the upcoming seventh grade standards. What proportion of my students is that? Is it 10%? Is it 15%? Is it 50%? Is it 60% of them? And who are they? Okay, so you have some kind of a screening measure. It's either the previous year's end of year test that you predict from, or you give them another screening test at the beginning of the year, and you say, okay, here are all the kids that we've got. It's a lot of them that have a low probability of being successful in meeting grade level standards at the end of the year, unless we do something to help them beyond what we would typically do in their regular instructional program. So these are all the kids who need some kind of intervention. Let's say it's 50% of the kids, as it will be in some schools. And the next thing then you have to be able to sort out is who in this group of kids that aren't likely to be successful on the end of the year test have these more serious word level reading problems, and who are sort of okay in that area and that probably need instruction that's focused mostly on comprehension skills. And you can do that in a variety of ways. You can give grade level reading passages and see how fluently and accurately they read them. You can give them a variety of sort of brief screening measures that test their word level skills. And so what you're trying to do there is sort your potentially struggling readers into two groups. One that can really profit from instruction that's just focused on comprehension, and another group that might need a broader range of kind of instruction going all the way down to the word level, decoding and fluency and supports to help build kids' confidence that they can actually read grade-level text. Now, what amount of training and experience required to do that? Well, not necessarily a lot at that level, because you're talking about giving fairly brief screening measures at the beginning of the year, and so that can be handled in a fairly straightforward way once you know what tests to use and you've got a few people to give them. In Florida, we're working on some computer-based tests to do this for us so that we can just have kids go to the computer lab and take these tests, and then we'll be able to sort them into these kind of groups. Now, that's just the first step, though, in terms of planning instruction. Now, once you get a child into an intervention class, then teacher needs to be able to make an assessment of, you know, sort of what kind of strategies they use and how actively they can think and how well they can reason, how well they can make inferences. And that's much more problematic. We don't have really good tests that are easy to administer. And I'm just finishing writing a document about this, in fact, this assessment for adolescent literacy instruction. But the main recommendation we have at this point is that teachers need to really understand their grade-level standards really well and then develop either performance tasks or other kinds of interview methods or observational schemes that help them to understand what kids can do in relationship to those standards. For the really low-level kids, that is the kids down there with the word-level problems, there are a number of diagnostic tests that can be given. There's a good informal reading inventory can often tell you sort of just how bad are the decoding problems. Is this a child who just struggles with multisyllable words or also has some problems with single-syllable words if they've got a beginning or ending blend, you know, that sort of stuff. Very, very few kids are going to have trouble with letter-sound correspondences when they get to be in middle and high school, but some will struggle with blends, and lots of them will struggle with multisyllable words. And so there are a number of informal reading inventories on the market that intervention teachers can use, always assuming that the intervention teacher is pretty skilled and knows quite a bit about reading. If that assumption isn't true, then, of course, the assessment task becomes much more difficult. And it would take me an hour to explain what would be needed if they don't, well, they shouldn't be teaching in an intervention class if they already don't know quite a bit about reading. So that's my answer to that.
Thank you. The next question, the change in student performance for 8 to 10-year-olds was dramatic with LIPS and embedded phonics.
Yeah.
Two questions. What would you suggest for 5 to 7-year-olds to help prevent students from entering special education, and what would it take to accomplish the suggested model?
Oh, okay. Well, here's a recommendation I'll make to this group listening, and it's to read a book that's a really wonderful book. It's brief, and I'm going to get you the name of it. I didn't write it. I don't have any financial relationship to the people who sold it, but it tells the story of what happened in Kennewick, Washington, in the school district there, when they decided to work towards the goal of having 90% of their students read at grade level by the end of third grade, and many of their schools accomplished this goal. And so the recommendations here are really quite well known. I mean, and we have another document that I wrote called A Principal's Guide for Elementary Schools that details things that people need to know. And you can get that document from this website, Well, it's the same website that, let me just go back in my slides, and I'll find the slide number here. It's the same website as on slide 12. And the document is called A Principal's Guide for something like A Principal's Guide for Elementary School on Improving Literacy Outcomes, and it can be downloaded if you go to that website, www.centeroninstruction.org. Because the answer to that question is a 40 or 50 minute explanation, and we don't have time for that here, but I would recommend that. But let me get I'm going to find another document on my computer here that gives a telephone number. I'll give you the name of this book, and if we have any elementary school people here on this audience that are interested in how to dramatically increase the performance of and prevent reading problems, this is a really good book to read. It's called Annual Growth for All Students, Catch-Up Growth for Those Who Are Behind. And I'm going to give you a phone number that you can call and find out how to order it. Again, I have no financial relationship with these folks at all. I read the book myself a year ago, and I ordered a whole bunch of copies and have been giving them out ever since. But the area code is 509-783-2139. It's called Annual Growth for All Students, Catch-Up Growth for Those Who Are Behind. And the telephone number is 509-783-2139. I sound like one of those late-night commercials doing that, but I just really believe that the key for young kids in preventing reading problems is identifying them early and then providing enough intervention instruction to meet their needs. And what this book does is shows you what you might actually have to do for some kids, at much as 90 minutes of intervention a day in second or third grade in order to have them reach grade level standards. But it's just really a good book written from the principal's perspective with lots of good quotes and examples about how it was done. So I'd recommend that.
Okay, thank you. We'll forward out that information to everybody after the call as well.
Okay.
The amount of training and coaching is stated for the ERO model on slide 26. Is this training curriculum-based professional development only on the intended intervention program, or
yes.
Do teachers receive evidence-based professional development about reading development as well?
No, it was that was professional development focusing on how to do the activities and the instructional sequence in those interventions. Now, of course, there was some sort of larger context setting. You don't do program-specific professional development without also talking about its meaning in the larger context, but it was primarily focused on helping them understand the instructional routines, what comes first, what comes next, and the scope and sequence, how to organize their lessons and their groups in the classroom to do those particular interventions.
Okay.
You can read a lot more about this also and exactly how they did it in the document that I have as a reference at the end of my PowerPoint.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Torgerson, and thank you, everyone, for joining us today. All of the questions and their answers will be emailed to each of you who are registered on this live chat session, and they will also be posted in the library section of our website. Again, I'd like to remind you about the Institute for Literacy and Learning Summer Conferences, June 16th through the 20th in Harrisburg, PA. We're offering the Best Practices of Teaching Reading, led by Dr. Motz, the Best Practices of Literacy Coaching with Dr. Denton, and Strategic Best Practices for District Leaders with Mary Doe Doniker from June 16th through the 20th at the Holiday Inn Harrisburg, PA. You can learn about more about these conferences on our website. If you are located in Pennsylvania and are interested in receiving one Act 48 credit for participating in this professional development conference call, please visit our website at www.theinstituteforliteracyandlearning.org/Torgerson, T-O-R-G-E-S-E-N. There are no links on our website to this hidden page, so please write this down. Again, www.theinstituteforliteracyandlearning.org/Torgerson. You can register on that site for the next 7 days. Registration for the Act 48 credit will close a week from today on March 18th. Thank you again, Dr. Torgerson, for spending your time with us today at the Institute for Literacy and Learning. I am now going to unmute the audience, and after I do so, could everyone please join me in giving Dr. Torgerson a round of applause? Just one moment, please.
The conference is no longer in lecture mode.
Thank you so much, Dr. Torgerson, and have a great day.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Well, thanks to all. Thanks to everyone for attending.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.